My name's Alan Birchall. I'm a group policy MVP. I love group policy. Group policy is the best. It is the best configuration tool in the world. All right, it's the most pervasive group configuration system in the world. Who here has group policy in their organization? Yes, that's right. Everybody who has an Active Directory has group policy, bar none. So group policy, used by all, been around for a very long time, since Windows 2000, all right? So group policy, we all know it, it's been around, it's evolved over time, okay? New things have happened to it, new changes have happened to it, but there's new management tools as well. SSCM's been around for a while, Intune's a new one, it's been out for a couple of years now from Microsoft, obviously. And so coming from a person who loves group policy, and you hear about, oh, Intune, it's this new way to manage computers, makes me a little bit worried, and it's like, oh, I gotta have to relearn everything. It's like, oh, it's a bit scary. So when I did this session, I really took this session from a point of view of group policy. I'm a group policy expert, and I've learned about Intune and how it can work with and complement group policy in your organization. So this session, just setting it, I'm gonna go through a lot of group policy things. That is what I'm good at. Hopefully, you'll get some nice nuggets of information out of this. But also at the end, I'm gonna go through configuring some settings using Intune and how to make sure that Intune is also gonna work well with your group policy, make sure that they work together. So before I start, I also have to mention that I'm also the technical editor of this book, Group Policy Fundamental Security in the Managed Desktop. It's by Jeremy Moskowitz. He presented a number of years ago with me here at TechEd New Zealand, if any of you remember him. New book, Windows 10, covers Windows 10, Windows Server 2016. We'll go through all the new stuff. A lot of the stuff I'm talking a bit about in this session will be in this book, okay? Look for it at all good Amazon.com stores. You'll be able to get it on Kindle and download it. It's not out yet, it'll be out soon, okay? But Group Policy Fundamentals, look for that cover, because he's currently got his other book. He's got the current version out now, which covers Windows 8. Still very good book, great reference guide. Covers a lot of the group policy fundamentals from long ago, but stuff that you still really need to know. So group policy and Intune. So addenda. What I'm going to do is talk about things from about Windows 7 timeframes of what's happened in group policy. Now, for some of you, you may already know this, and if it's a repeat of some of these topics, I'm sorry. But what I have found is that in some organizations, you've been on Windows XP for a long time, and you've made the jump to Windows 7. Okay, and it's hard to understand all the new things that have come along in the intermediate. You haven't had the exposure to it. There might be just things that you've just never found out or you've discovered and you go, oh, what's this feature here? I don't know how it works. And really just need to get a bit of a catch up. So I'm gonna do a catch up from Windows 7. So I'm gonna cover some really new group policy features that were introduced post Windows XP. All right, kind of a bit down, a trip down memory lane, but I think these are important features to cover because you need to understand how these things work. All right, I want to try to get you up to Windows 10 level, all right, of how group policy works, because how group policy works in Windows 2000 times is pretty similar, but they've been tweaking it and refining it along the way. I'm going to talk about what's new with group policy in Windows 10. All the settings I could find out about Windows 10. I'll kind of spoil my session. There's not a lot of new group policy stuff in Windows 10. Okay, in fact, there's under the hood, not much at all. But there's a lot of new settings, all right? And there's a few other things that are new, right? It's not like there's no changes to group policy. You'll notice there's new group policy settings there, all right? But the mechanism in under the hood really hasn't changed. And I'm also gonna talk about managing computers with group policy in Intune. So group policy in Intune, two configuration management tools that have overlapping settings. You don't want to mix the streams, all right? And if you know Ghostbusters, mixing the streams is bad. Mixing the streams is really bad. You can start looking like this guy here or this guy here, or you can be really excited and go, hey, I've got two configuration tools. You know, Unikitty Ghostbusters version. You could basically, what I'm saying is that the theme of this session is how to make both your management tools work together as well as what's going to be new. Okay, use some Lego group, Lego Ghostbusters things here because, you know, can't really copyright the Lego photos. These are photos of a friend of mine. That's actually a ghost, the real set, you know, not those people, but the actual Lego Ecto-1. That's a real set you can buy. So, starting our trip down memory lane, everything new since Windows 7, because Vista never existed. Who here still has Windows Vista deployed in their organization? Yep, nobody. Great. Excellent. All right. So, first of all, things to be aware about. Network location awareness was something that was actually introduced in Windows Vista, and it's quite an important feature in group policy. What happened if you had Windows XP in your organization? You have your mobile workers. They have laptops. They go out in the field. Maybe they're out in the field for many months at a time. All right, and they come into the office. They plug their laptop in. They check their email. They go, great, got all my email. And they disconnect their laptop, and they're off again. Right, if that was on a Windows XP machine, those laptops would never get a group policy update. Because who knows how often group policy updates on a computer? It's about 180 minutes. Right, or 2 hours with a bit of an offset. So if you got 180 minutes, you're covered pretty well there. Okay, and it would just repeat every 2 hours with the offset and a bit of a random offset. And if you plugged in and it wasn't at that time, you missed your group policy update. So what Microsoft did is they said, okay, we're going to have some events that can trigger group policy updates, and one of them is location, network location awareness. As soon as your laptop is plugged into a network, it now knows that, hey, I'm connected to the corporate network, it's been more than 2 hours since my last group policy update. So if you just disconnect your laptop and plug it straight back in, it's not going to trigger a new group policy update. But it knows that it's been more than 2 hours, and it will actually trigger a network update. This is really important because obviously you want to make sure that those settings for those users, as soon as they've connected their laptops, are delivered to those machines. You don't want that window of opportunity for those users to go months on end without having new configuration settings in your organization. All right, so really important. That's the event ID there if you want to, you know, look it up yourself. Event ID 4003. So you can see there it says, oh, I've found a network state change. I need to do a group policy update. And so you can see that happening in the event log. So really important feature. And it's why I say it's why Vista wasn't all that bad, all right? Vista had a lot of good things under the cover. It ran like a dog, but it had a lot of good, you know, basics and fundamentals under there. Kind of like Windows 8.1 had a lot of good fundamentals in there. We all love Windows 10 though, but you know, same thing. All right, group policy services update. So since Windows 7, the group policy engine itself, in Windows XP, group policy actually used to run in the win logon process. Okay, and then they separated it as a separate service. So in Windows 7, the group policy service, it's its own separate hardened service. It's sitting there, it's running all the time. But group policy only updates, again, only every 2 hours. I'll say 2 hours, but when I say 2 hours, it's kind of like an approximation. So every 2 hours, the service runs. The service is sitting there consuming RAM, a little bit of RAM, assuming CPU cycles, a little bit of CPU cycles, just so it could schedule every 2 hours a group policy update. With Windows 7 going to Windows 8, they did a lot more optimization. Like, they did a lot of optimization going from Vista to 7, but from 7 to 8, they did even more, and they looked at the service and they said, well, why does this service actually need to be running? And lo and behold, it doesn't need to be running. So as you can see there, and I hope my laser pointer doesn't work. Anyway, as you can see highlighted there, the group policy client service there is off. Now, what does that actually look like? So I'm just going to switch over to computer here. I'm just going to launch computer management. You can all see that, can't you? Yep. Well, let's try to. Sorry. So I'm just going to open up the services option. is running. All right, so it actually starts up. It's an automatic triggered service, and hopefully maybe this one's... Oh. Okay, so what's probably happened is that there's been a group policy triggered. It is a hardened service. I can't actually just manually stop it. But as you can see there, it's an automatic triggered service. So what that triggers on, do I have any other clients? Oh, maybe this one. Really what I want to just show is the fact that the service itself is off, and it stays off until you do a group policy update or until there's some sort of network location awareness and, I'd say what's happened is that these machines have just resumed from Hibernate, and of course that's triggered network location awareness. And what does the network location awareness do? Oh, you need to do a group policy update. Anyhow, what's supposed to happen, sorry about this, is that the service will be shut off. So if you happen to be going to your machine and you're thinking, you're looking through your services and you're thinking, oh, why is the group policy client turned off? Oh, that's not good. Okay. The reason is that it turns itself off after 10 minutes. If you do a GP update, hit enter, the service starts, it waits for 10 minutes, and then it shuts off. Okay. It does that, and now what triggers then the 2-hour update? So there'll be a scheduled task in the system context that actually triggers the next group policy update. Okay, so when you, if you ever cracked open task scheduler, you'll see all the processes running, but this is actually a system task. So you actually have to launch it as a system process. But basically, it just schedules a task. So it's basically leveraging the task scheduler to trigger the next group policy update rather than the process sitting there in the background just running, consuming resources, consuming RAM. All right. Okay. Moving along. If... these pointers are great. Okay. If for some reason, and I don't really understand why you would... not working. That's okay. If for some reason you want the... There you go. Oh, you're spoiling my... If for some reason you want to revert that behavior, there is a group policy option there that says turn on group policy science service. Automatic optimization, account optimization. It's AOAC optimization. All right, always on, always connected. That's it. Always on, always connected optimization. All right, where you can actually turn that on. Note for Windows servers, where normally you're not running in such constricted RAM and CPU, and it's actually turned on by default. So if you're actually trying to get high density on your servers in a virtual farm, this actually might be a service that you want to turn off. All right. So actually disable turning it off, double negative. We love group policies. Hey, you know, always have double negatives. So you might actually want to turn this off because it actually gets you slightly, it's just one of those, straws that you can put on just to slightly make the density of those servers better in say a virtual environment. Moving on. All right, catching up since Windows 7. So changes to the group policy. One of the things that they really wanted to do in Windows 8.1, was optimize the performance of group policy, especially over slow links. One of the things that really slowed it down, and I did demo this last year in TechEd, is that you have an option called synchronous. There's a group policy update called a synchronous group policy update. A synchronous group policy update happens whenever Windows 8 or earlier had to do one of these tasks, a folder redirection, a software install, group policy preferences, drive mapping, or disk quotas. All right. Basically, these are settings that cannot be applied to your machine dynamically in the background in Windows 8 or earlier. In Windows 8.1, they changed that. So they've actually said group policy drive preference mappings and disk quotas. Who here ever actually applied a group policy NTFS volume disk quota? Nobody. So no one cares about disk quotas. Great. But who here has applied a group policy preference as a drive mapping? Yes. Okay. Good. So drive mappings in Windows 8.1 and later are now dynamic, and the user doesn't have to log off. All right? And I'm going to demo that. Okay. So here we have Windows 10 machine. My Windows 7 machine's not running. That's okay. I'll start that up. So what I'll do is I'll go through group policy, edit the group policy, preferences, drive mapping. So we all have a drive mapping like that. It's probably not to the domain controller. I'm not recommending you do drive mappings to domain controllers for your users. That would be bad. It's always W drive because, you know, that's for work. Okay, so I've applied that. The group policy is there. Refresh. There we go. We have the drive mapping. I'm now going to go to a Windows 8 machine. Look at my drive mappings here. On my drives, this computer. So notice here, drive mappings. It's just C drive. There you go. W drive has just appeared. All right. You do have to be careful that you don't unmap the drive for the user while they're using it. So that would be bad. I have mixed reports of whether or not an open file will actually prevent the drive mapping from being removed. In my experience, yes, sometimes that drive mapping can be removed. I think it's all about how the application has locked the file. All right, so you need to be careful with drive mappings. So warning, don't go changing drive mappings during the day. All right, you can do a create. All right, process, which means the group policy will just create it. Don't use replace. Problem with replace action for group policy preferences. Well, what it does is it deletes it and then it adds it back. All right, so every 2 hours the drive gets unmapped and then gets added back. Not good. Okay, but then if we go over here now to our Windows 7 machine. Oh, I'm not already logged on. That's probably going to map the drive now, isn't it? No, it's not. That's good, because I haven't done a group policy update. So what I'm just going to do here is GP update. The user policy has been updated. Notice I don't have the drive mapping. I'm just going to wait for the computer policy. Certain user policies need you to log off. I wonder which one that could be. So I'm just going to log off. Notice very quickly there was a drive mapping policy spinning by, and yep, bang, there's the W drive there. So that's the behavior on Windows 7, behavior on Windows 8.1, and Windows 10, because 8.1 is dead to everyone now, isn't it? It's Windows 10 or bust. All right, so new behavior now in Windows 10 it's an asynchronous policy setting now. Okay, moving on. Clicker works. All right, always use the latest version of Group Policy Management Console. There's some really good reasons for it. If you have Windows 7 deployed in your organization, and you're thinking about deploying Windows 10 or Windows 8.1, let's face it, you're not deploying 8.1 now, you're deploying Windows 10. You should always have the latest version of the Group Policy Management Console. Group Policy Management Console has all the newest settings in there. Group Policy Management Console on Windows 7 does not have the Internet Explorer 10 Group Policy Preferences in there. Okay? So you need to install the Group Policy Preferences the latest version of Group Policy Manager. Also, the latest version of Group Policy Management Console now supports IPv6. All right, so if you're starting to deploy IPv6 in your organization and you want to map drives or printers to IPv6 addresses, Group Policy Preferences now has that support. All right, but you need to use the latest. I call this the excuse to my manager to upgrade my computer to Windows 10. All right, because you need Group Policy Management Console. Unfortunately, I did another session that explained how you shouldn't log on to computers or workstations using your domain admin credentials. And you're probably editing group policy objects with your domain admin credentials. So now I'm going to say this is an excuse for a second computer that's running Windows 10 that I can log on with domain admins to modify group policy objects. You don't have to have domain admins to modify group policy objects. Most of you probably do. You can use delegate permissions to group policy objects. I'd recommend that, but let's be realistic. It's a really good excuse to get a new computer. All right, but you do need to get the latest and greatest. Now, there's a couple of reasons why that's the case. So I'm just going to jump back and show you the internals of group policy preferences, of that group policy preference for Internet Explorer. There's another number of other reasons why it's important to have the latest and greatest. You know, the latest versions also have any bug fixes in there where the previous versions don't. Okay, there have been some updates pushed out to the latest version and the previous versions. If you're in my last session about the C password fields, which I'm going to mention soon, they've actually disabled some functionality in all versions of Group Policy Management Console. If you have some really old versions of Group Policy Management Console, they didn't disable it. But anyway, so let's go in, edit, preferences. This is actually something that I've spoken a couple of times about in previous years. And as a group policy MVP, and all of us were like, why do the group policy preferences for IE10, for IE10, have a strange version? So I've just created an Internet Explorer group policy preference here. I'm now going to crack that open. This is my shortcut to actually going to the system volume of a particular group policy object. I'm going to open the preference. It's an internet setting. Open it. All right. Here, the group policy. That thing that I crossed out actually has a version number in there. And for the last couple of years, we were actually talking to Microsoft as MVPs going, you've kind of made a mistake. Because that's going to be really bad when IE12 comes out. And they're like, they looked at us and they go, take that on a note. Really what it was a bit of a prediction that they were actually saying, we're not going to make any more versions of Internet Explorer. And what we're going to do, and of course what they did is they made Edge. Edge is a completely different browser. So what they have done is they went from 10 to 99 because versions of Internet Explorer 11 are going to get updated. And as they get updated, the minor version number of IE gets incremented. Okay, so your minor version gets incremented. I think they were just like, let's just play it safe and let's go 99. So we have enough version space there to last us a millennium. Okay, so basically, what this means is your Internet Explorer 10 group policy preferences actually manage also Internet Explorer 11. However, note, you do not have all the Internet Explorer 11 settings in Internet Explorer 10 group policy preferences. It's not the end of the world. Most of them are just some of the advanced options you'll see under here. But generally speaking, group policy preferences for Internet Explorer are still the best way to configure it. It gives you the ability to set defaults and let the users override it. It gives you the ability to set granular settings by using the function keys. You notice under here, a lot of these settings here have green lines. That means those settings are enabled. If I hit F7, I can actually selectively disable specific settings, which means if I tick this now, it'll delete the browser history on exit, but it won't configure the home page tab. All right. If I go to the advanced tab, hit F8, it actually goes through. Those red circles there basically means that none of those settings will be configured. So it's still a very granular way that you can configure it. It's a great way that you can actually apply these settings once, set it as a preference, and you can also target it. Really excellent. So I'm not saying don't use the Internet Explorer 10 group policy preferences. It's still the best way to configure your IE browser. So on that theme, having the latest group policy management console, what I would say is you don't want to have mixed versions of group policy management console in your organization. Use the latest version for your organization and only the latest version. It can get a bit conflicting. You might cross the streams again, and we don't like crossing streams. So you don't want to mix the versions of group policy management console in your organization, basically because you know, it could end up being that you have some inconsistencies with your group policy settings. So group policy, I've talked about it a couple of times, how group policy can be done, can be refreshes every 2 hours. Okay, but one of the things that you might want to do is you might want to push out a group policy change, but you're waiting for that group policy object to replicate. All right, so one of the things that the new version of Group Policy Management Console has, okay, is the status indicator. What the status indicator basically does is that if you click on the domain, you can actually then see the replication status of all the group policy objects in your organization. All right, you can see if they're inconsistent. It really helps troubleshoot replication issues with your organization, if for your Active Directory domain controllers, especially system volume. And it also means that you know once your group policy is replicated, that's when you start counting the 2 hours. Because until the group policy is actually delivered to all your domain controllers, your clients aren't going to get that group policy setting. So group policy status indicator, yet another reason why you need to upgrade to the latest version of Group Policy Management Console, yet another reason why you need to go to your manager to say, I need a Windows 10 machine. However, 2 hours might not be long enough for you to actually do a group for you to push out a group policy to your organization. There's another feature in the Group Policy Management Console. Do you understand how getting a new Group Policy Management Console is really good and that you shouldn't be using Group Policy Management Console on Windows 7? How many times can I say Group Policy Management Console? Anyway, so there's an option now called Group Policy Update. So what this will do is actually go out and push out a group policy update to your computers in your organization. And what I'll do is I'll actually show you how that works. So first of all, what I have to do is, this is kind of like chicken and egg. To push out a group policy object to your organization, what you first have to do is actually push out a group policy that says allow group policy update. Because what it does is make an active network connection to the client and actually schedules a task on that machine to do a group policy update in the next 10 minutes. So when you do a group policy update via the Group Policy Management Console, know that you're still waiting 10 minutes for that to happen. If you have starter GPOs configured and the first time you go into the starter GPO section here, you'll find that you click Create Starter GPO Objects. You have one here called Group Policy Remote Update Firewall Ports. So what I want to do is I just want to create a new group policy up from that object, GP update. Of course there was update one, which then actually just creates GP update one, a group policy that has all the necessary firewall rules in it that allows you to do a group policy update. So if I go through here and I right click on my group workstations folder and I go group policy update, I click yes. I have one computer that already had that policy applied and it says succeeded, the rest are just going to fail, all right? Now I could sit here and stand here for the next 2 hours and it'll propagate out, but we wouldn't want to do that. But what I could do very quickly is actually go group policy update. This is actually Windows 10 long-term servicing branch. Who's seen it? Yeah? It doesn't have any modern apps. It has two modern, oh, group policy didn't work, bugger. Okay, it doesn't have any modern apps in it, except these two here, and doesn't have the Edge browser in it. It's very sparse, but if you want to stay on a version of Windows that's going to be stable, this is actually what it looks like. Lack of network connectivity. No. 2 seconds. Let me double check. All right, not that one. That one's dead to me. Let's go back to this one. Group policy update. So what this is now doing is I've had to force a group policy update now, basically so that this computer has the firewall rule now that it will actually trigger a group policy update. Computer rule's done, very good. If I go back here and I right click again, group policy update. Hopefully now what I'll see, Windows 10A, why hasn't that worked? Far out, I'm batting really bad here, aren't I? Have I applied it correctly? I don't want to spend too much more time. Group policy update, workstations. Oh, that network connectivity. All right, let's pretend it worked. Pretend it worked. It does work. But what I really need to stress on you is that if you want group policy update functionality in your organization, you have to pre-set up the firewall rules to push out the group policy update settings to your computers. All right? It's not there to be reactive. Well, it is there to be reactive. But you can't just say, oh, I'll just use group policy update. Oops, I've pushed out something that's wrong. I'll just do a group policy update and undo that change. It's not going to happen. Right? You must have made sure that you've got the firewall rules there before you start. Safety improvements in the group policy management console. So I talked about this ad nauseum at my session yesterday. See passwords. Any group policy preference, such as drive mapping, such as local administrator accounts, anything that requires a password has this value called a cPassword. They're very, very bad. And Microsoft have disabled them, and you should remove them from your organization. Okay? There is a tool from SDM software that you can download to actually purge the group policy cPasswords from your organization. And so you can use that to actually just go through, discover all the group policy objects in your organization that have cPasswords and clean them up. All right. This is what they look like. It even tells you, you don't do this. It's going to give you a warning. And yes. So another thing that I wanted to talk about very briefly, and again, I'm just going to reference a previous session here, is the local admin password service. If you want a tool that helps you manage the local admin passwords, local admin passwords on your computers, definitely go to the Channel 9 website and download the video of my session from yesterday where I go through end-to-end how you manage local administrator account passwords now in your organization. The crux of it is you don't use group policy preferences anymore to manage local administrator passwords in your organization. If you do, you are opening yourself up to significant risk to what they call pass the hash attacks. Non-intermingling of profiles. Okay, Windows XP had roaming profiles. Okay, you threw the user and they went to a profile path, right? And it was just like, that's the folder that they're profiling. You went to Windows Vista, AKA Windows 7, and you went there and it created a .v2 profile. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. Windows XP had an old profile version. Windows 7 has a new profile version. Windows 8 actually had a V3 profile version. Who knew? Not me. A couple of people. Okay, cool. And then 8.1 came out with another one called a V4. Great. The problem was, is they didn't enable it by default. And roaming profiles between Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and Windows 7 and Vista aren't compatible. Great. So what that means is, Microsoft released a hotfix, which is like part of the November 2013 update for Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, that allowed you to actually enable roaming, intermingling roaming profiles. Basically, what that meant is that Windows 8 will have a V3, Windows 8.1 will have a V4, and Windows 10 has a V5. So there's a nice table here about how you don't want to mix your profiles, because mixing your profiles would be bad. They're not supported. The one thing you do have to do, though, is you do have to make sure that you enable the registry key, user profile path extension version. All right. I had the KB on the previous slide there, so you can download the slides, which has all this information. But you have to be sure that you don't mix your profiles, because it's actually not supported by Microsoft. You might get into some, I don't know if you've noticed some problems. Some people have said they've had some problems with their profiles. Of course, the start menu in Windows 8 and Windows 7 are vastly different, so there are some things in there that don't roam very well. Okay, so you don't want to be doing it. However, in Windows 10, you may or may not have noticed if you've already deployed it in your organization, Windows 10 now has V5 profiles. So now you have 5 profile types in your organization to worry about. Great. Something to keep in mind. All right, because it's very important, because when you're roaming users, you might not have known this. You might have had the V dot nothing. There was no dot. You had your V2. You went to Windows 10, and all of a sudden, you're scratching your head saying, why do I have a V5 profile? That doesn't make any sense. So there is a V2, and there is a V3 and a V4 profile type. All right, needs to be enabled. You probably want to enable that at some stage in your organization. Do your testing first, of course. And again, mixing the streams is bad, so I've had to put in another reference there to Ghostbusters. And the Marshmallow Man, he's bad. All right, so we all know how bad the Marshmallow Man is. So Another reference to not mixing the streams, so I had to put that in there. Okay, demo of the roaming profiles. I'm actually just running out of time here a bit. I've got a few more things to cover, but what I will show you is, here we go here. So this is basically what you might see right now. So I'm talking about V2, V5 profiles. Basically, this is probably what you're gonna see. So if you start seeing this, where you're having V2s and V5s, know that it's because Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 had those V3 and 4 profiles, okay? So I'm just gonna move along here, okay? But to enable that via, it's just simply a group policy preference. Registry key, here's one I created earlier. You need to apply it to the machine, okay? Apply that to your Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and remember your November 2013 update roll-up, which you probably already have deployed in your organization. So what's new with group policy in Windows 10? Now we're getting to the crux of it. Trip down memory lane, now we're here and today. All right, so the good news from an IT pro point of view is, and I've mentioned this before, nothing, all right? You're not having to understand more fundamentals of the group policy engine and how it works. I've just gone through most of the big things that have changed with how group policy has changed over time. All right, so if you're coming from a Windows XP environment or coming from a Windows 7 environment, there's not a heck of a lot that you have to worry about except what I've just covered. Under the hood, but there are certainly many more settings. All right, there's a lot more settings in Windows 10. To cover things like the Edge browser, to cover things like the new Start menu. If your organization isn't yet at Windows Server 2016 Active Directory mode, and I'm pretty much sure that most of your organizations aren't, what you will need to do is download the ADMX and ADML pack from Microsoft, which is now available now. There's the URL. You can just copy that one number down there and just search it on downloads.microsoft.com. And you want the latest version of the remote server admin tools, as I've hammered into you, that you need the latest version of the group policy management console for Windows 10, all right? If you're running Windows Server 2012, right, you have the latest version for that platform. The latest version, though, for 2016 is still Tech Preview 3, so I wouldn't be recommending that you use Windows Server 2016 to edit your production group policy objects. Again, another reason to get a Windows 10 machine for yourself to edit group policy objects. All right, configuring the Start menu. You can actually configure the Start menu in Windows 10, and I'm going to show you how that works. Excellent. So here I have a Windows 10 computer, and what I want to do is actually export the Start menu layout. So first of all, here's my Start menu. All right, I'm going to move something around. I'm going to drag the store down here. I want to edge over here. Yeah, that's the Start menu I want to deploy to my users. So I'm going to run PowerShell. And the command is export, what do you think it's called? Start, actually lay out. To a par, /, oh, actually I don't even want to do this. mystart.xml. Done. So what does that look like? Funnily enough, if I go, start.xml, crack that open. There it is. So that's actually how the Start menu, that's a Start menu configuration file. So you could actually crack that open and start making modifications to itself. Probably wouldn't, because the Start menu likes to be in like multiples, like on the you want the Start menu has the columns and rows. It's the columns that it seems to like to enforce. So what I'd really do is export the Start menu. Don't try to modify this, but you can kind of see how, you know, it's configured. Now to actually implement that, there's a new group policy. I'm going to edit the local group policy here. So you could actually use this to lock down the start menu on a single machine, all right, kiosk machine, stuff like that. Get rid of all the modern apps altogether, I suppose. So I'm just going to open the group policy object. Local user start menu. And that's the one there, start layout. Okay, and it's really easy now to set. So what are we going to do? So we're going to go, it's my start, wasn't it? My start.xml. Apply that. So now I've applied that policy. Group policy update. So the thing is, if you actually apply a start menu and it's got a modern app and that modern app isn't there, it's just not going to show up when you apply it somewhere else. Okay? So you might want to just apply some very core apps to your start menu if you want to lock it down like that. So now it's not, this is still going to work. Yep. I've got to log off. Up here, isn't it? Sign out. Preparing Windows, please wait. So I can't modify or drag. I am dragging, trust me, I am. I can't actually modify that start menu now. Locked, frozen, all right? But we've still got most used here, which is a dynamic list. We still have a taskbar here. There's no group policies to configure those. We still have all apps, so all my apps are still there if I want to access them. But the layout of my start menu is configured and set. So maybe you do want to do that in your organization. Microsoft mentality though, now going forward, is that you really want to let the user be able to configure things that don't really count, like how their desktop looks and feels, right? No one likes working in an environment that's completely the same. Everyone customizes their desk at work, unless you're like on a completely hot desk, clean desk environment, but like they like to customize their physical desk at work because it makes them feel like, you know, they have some power over their little, you know, space, right? Same thing with their desktop. Users feel trapped or locked in. Yes, they could accidentally remove them all and go, oh, I don't know what I did. But after a while, you know, you want to let the users feel like they have some freedom. They don't, but you might want to make them feel like they have some freedom, okay? You certainly don't give them admin access. Yeah, that would be bad, but at least give them some freedom. But if you really need to, that's how you configure the start menu. All right. Moving on. Edge homepage settings. This is a hilarious registry key. I could not go past this. How the Edge browser is configured and how the home key, homepage is set. Ready? Read that. That is the actual registry key. Protected dash, it is a violation of Windows policy to modify C, aka .ms browser policy. That's the actual registry key for modifying the Edge browser. Don't believe me? Oh, hang on. Look, HKey current user, software, Microsoft, Windows, current version, is it an app container? App container, because it's a modern app. Am I right? Current user software, classes. That's what I did wrong. Classes. All right, it's local settings. Software, Microsoft Windows, current versions, app container. Storage, there it is, Microsoft Edge. That's so far, is that right? Edge, Microsoft Edge. There it is, there it is. Oh God, I thought you were watching. Sorry. There it is there. That is the actual registry key to set the home page and Edge. Now, does that mean you're never going to be able to configure the Edge home page? No, they haven't said that. Microsoft are working on Edge, and they're continuing to bring out more management features for Edge going into the future. So at some stage in the future, there may or may not be policies to configure the Edge homepage settings. What this is primarily intended to is for developers. It's for people who write things for the browser. Don't change the homepage of a user if you're installing some software on a computer. And if you go to that web page there, aka MS Browser Policy, that's what it's talking about. It's kind of like when you add, you know, do you want to change your homepage? Hey, it's like when you install some crapware or something on your computer. And it's like saying, don't do this. All right. So they really don't want you as a developer to change that. But if you really do want to change the homepage, you can actually go into Group Policy Preferences, export that key. It's a binary blob, right? So you need to set it first, and you need to import it as a Group Policy Preference, and then deploy that. I'm not going to show you how to do that because that would be bad because Microsoft doesn't want me to show you how to do that. They haven't asked me to, but I'm pretty sure they don't want to based on that registry key. But it is possible. It is possible. All right, so that's the, yes. I've already shown you how to do the start menu, haven't I? Okay, finally, Windows 10 and Intune. Okay, conceptually, where does Windows 10 and Intune fit together? All right, Intune basically will manage your phone, it will manage your computer, it will manage your devices, all right? It'll manage non-domain join machines, it will manage domain join machines. All right, it's better than ActiveSync in that it has a lot more flexibility, it's an evolution. It has the OMA DM mobile device management, it uses those URIs to actually configure your devices. And you can use it basically to manage a wide range of devices in your organization. Especially like BYOD, right? That's where you'd use Intune. It also works when you're not connected to the domain physically to your corporate network, right? When you're not connected to your corporate network, right? So when you're out in the field and you need to desperately push out some sort of policy, do an update, do a security patch, it ensures that those machines are still lightly managed even if they are domain joined. Active Directory, Group Policy, System Center are still the most fully fleshed management configuration systems for your organization, all right, for your domain join PCs, okay? So Intune has its place, it's a really big place, but it's not the panacea yet. And Microsoft are always adding new functionality to it, all right? So in Intune, for Windows 10, there are about 105 what they call URI, custom URI settings, all right? 105, that's pretty cool. Group Policy has quite a few more settings that you can apply. Each one of those is a setting to your computer. There we go, we're at the end. Thousands and thousands. Internet Explorer alone has 1,600 Group Policy settings. All right, that doesn't include then the preferences on top of that. All right. Far more infinitely configurable. But what I should mention is that just because you have all those knobs and levers and everything to change with Group Policy, I'm not saying it's a great idea that you use them all. I'm saying that what you should have is configure what you need to configure in your organization, and you can pretty much have the option to configure whatever you want. All right. With Intune, though, they're starting off small. They're picking the low-hanging fruit settings first that you need to be able to configure. So for Edge, they're the Group Policy settings that you can configure for Edge. They're the ones that are in the Windows 10 ADMX files. Has anyone tried to configure Edge using Group Policy? No. Doesn't exactly work right now. You can configure the Enterprise Site List Manager and send all internet traffic over the internet. You need to keep checking for the latest builds, all right? The management story around Edge at the moment is, you know, it's still partially there. Features are still coming. And similarly, these are the same similar policy settings that you use for Intune. And that's the Intune list there. So jumping over to Intune, This is the URL. It was on the slide deck. If you wanted to, you need to download it. There are enough number of custom URI settings for Windows 10 devices. This is the reference for those settings. These are all the settings here that you can currently configure. You can configure Wi-Fi, you can configure some system settings, some connectivity settings, some experience settings. You notice here we have a both and a mobile. So these are either mobile phone or desktop or both, right? So Windows 10 mobile, Windows 10 desktop. Some security settings, text input, you know, even like allow Korean extended something. And so keep going through, we've got settings. Windows Defender, we can configure Windows Defender. So basically, these are settings that you can configure using Intune in your organization and Edge browser settings. So one of the ones that I want to configure here is, allow behavior monitoring. So what I need to do, and I'm just going to click here and make sure my session is still active. No, I need to re-authenticate. Of course I do. That's security for you. So while that's loading, what I'm going to do here, right now what you need to do if you want to actually configure these Windows 10 settings is you actually have to create a custom URI policy. So I'm just going to copy it. So this is what I do is basically, it's going to come up. Hello, computer. There we go. I'm going to go to configuration policies. I'm in Intune. I have a computer. I've added a computer. And I'm going to create a new policy. I'm going to create a new Windows policy. And I'm going to create a new custom policy for Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile. Create that policy. This is where you now need the URI. So allow behavior mon. All right, and then I want to add the OMA URI setting. You put that in there, make special note that it is case sensitive, so I just recommend you copy and paste the string. It's an integer value. And, what did I just do? Far out. I want to put the OAM value there, it's an integer value, and behavior mon. All right. So now I save that policy. I've now created a custom Windows 10 policy, which I'm now going to deploy. I can do all mobile devices, I can do all devices, I can do all. And I go, okay. That policy is now going to queue up and deploy to any of my machines that are Intune managed. Okay. If you go to the dashboard and you've configured those settings, some of those settings, such as allow Windows Defender, might actually come up under here under issues. I don't have any active at the moment. But might come actually under here as issues that are conflicting. It will actually tell you if you have Intune settings conflicting with group policy. All right, which means when the computer is on the domain, group policy will take precedence because group policy is refreshing. But when the computer is off the domain, the Intune will take precedence because there's no group policy refresh being applied to the machine. Okay, so what you have to understand is that you now have two management systems and you don't want to mix the streams. Theme of the story, don't mix the streams, all right? So how do we get around that? So there's a couple of ways you can get around that, and this is actually Microsoft guidance. Number one, you could create an OU, stick all your Intune computers in there. Okay, yep, we could do that. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it, and this is probably the slightly more refined way of doing it, is actually security group filter your group policy object. All right, this is pretty standard stuff. If you've ever done security group filtering on group policy objects, it's the ability to actually say all the computers or users in this OU, only if you're in a member of this group will you get this group policy setting. So here I've got a policy here called Defender. Now, Defender is one of the policy settings that I can push out via Intune. All right. Right here I have turn off real-time protection is enabled as a group policy. I don't know why I'd want to do that, but it conflicts with Intune, which says turn on Defender. So we have a conflicting setting here. So what we want to do is we need security group filter this policy setting. Before you do this, though, you have to make sure that when you're security filtering the group policy object, that it's only the Intune settings in that policy that you want to filter. So unfortunately, it might mean that you need to separate it out, have a group policy object that has the Intune settings in it, and then you migrate those settings there first, and then security filter just that. Because if you have other important settings applying to your organization, then you're going to lose those settings as well, because they're going to be filtered out as well. So to filter this, we go to the delegation tab of the group policy. By default, we'll have authenticated users. So if we look at the scope here, the security filtering is authenticated users. I don't want to remove authenticated users from a group policy object, because by default, all users should be able to read the group policy object, and the machine should then be able to evaluate whether or not that policy should apply or not. So what I'm going to do, I'm not going to remove it, but what I am going to do is untick the apply group policy option for authenticated users. It also means that if you've delegated group policy management in your organization to people who aren't domain admins, sometimes what happens is that they'll see that group policy object as inaccessible policy, all right, because they might not have the ability to actually view the contents of the group policy setting. Makes it harder for them to manage their organization because they might not know what settings are in there that actually apply to that, that might be affecting them. So I've removed the apply group policy setting, and now what I'm going to do is going to add, and we have a group, and so basically it's just a security group called Intune Computers, right? This literally is a group that has all the computers in it that are managed by Intune. So maybe in your organization you need to start doing this, you know, just a simple way to go, right, you're an Intune managed user, I'm just going to drag your computer into that group. What we want to do though, because these are Intune managed computers, is we want to filter it. So I've got the group there, I'm going to go to advanced, and I'm going to go down here and it says apply group policy, and I want to go deny. I think I made a mistake. I did. Okay, well, we do want to do apply deny, but what we don't want to do, sorry, that's my bad, is we don't want to actually remove apply group policy settings from authenticated users, because we still want it to apply to all the other computers in the organization. Okay, sorry, that was my mistake. So authenticated users still needs to stay there, but what we have done is gone to Intune Computers and we've gone deny. So now, if we have a look at the membership of Intune Computers, haven't got one, Win10A, computer object type. We've applied that. The group policy is filtered. I go over to Windows 10 machine. I have to reboot the computer, and the reason I have to reboot the computer is because I've just added it to that computer group membership. Basically, that's going to reboot. It's going to be in that group. The group's going to deny that policy to the computer, and it's going to filter that group policy setting so that it doesn't apply to Intune machines. So if you have a look at there is a Microsoft KB on the actual Intune website on how to filter it, and then it actually goes into how you do this with WMI. And you can do WMI filtering for this. The way they actually say how you do WMI filtering is you apply a custom WMI setting to that computer via group policy or script. So I have to deploy something custom to that machine to tag it as an Intune machine. It actually isn't that smart. It doesn't know that it's an Intune machine. You just have to push out the custom WMI, I think it's the MOF file to the machine, so that it can evaluate whether or not it's an Intune machine or not. So if you see the Microsoft guidance on how to do it via WMI, yeah, don't do that. Okay, if you have to use WMI, I suppose it's one way to do it, but you still have to get the fact that you tag that machine as an Intune machine. And how are you going to do that? You're probably going to do that via security group membership. And this is going to be a lot easier if you do it that way anyway. So I'm just going to do a group policy update. Oh, look, a problem with my profile. So what? Group policy update on my machine. Notice I have the defender policy there. And as soon as that's done, I'm going to go through. Running out of time. Please hurry up. It is an SSD, I promise you. Far out. All right, 3, 2, 1, please. No, okay, I'm moving on. So you get what I mean. Security group policy filtering, okay, is the way to really go. So I just demoed that. Basically what I've gone through is and again, the theme of the story is not mixing the streams. You don't want to mix the streams with Intune and group policy. It's just like any configuration tool. You don't want to have conflicting group policy settings and Intune settings in your organization. Make sure that you separate the two. Intune's really powerful. You saw how there's heaps of settings there. Windows 10 now supports it natively out of the box. All right, you don't need to deploy an agent. That's an important thing. Those settings that I showed you are custom settings that you can apply, but you don't need an agent deployed. All you need to do is go to work settings in the settings panel and add, the users just need to add themselves as a work account and it'll enroll them to do this. Very quickly, one another thing. The version number changed in Windows 10, okay? So if you used to use a WMI filter to say, I want to apply group policy objects to all my Windows 7 computers and later, it may have looked something like this, which is select stuff from operating systems where version number equals 6.1 or more. Okay, which means it will include, 7, 8, 8, 1. Will that include 7, 8, 8, 1? Yes, I think it will. But what you now need to do is, because the version number is a string of text, 1 comes before 6, even though it's the number 10. So this is the new WMI filter string. And if you go to my website, www.grouppolicy.biz, I have it all laid out there and how you do it, but it's in the slide deck as well, so you'll be able to get it from there. You need to do a pattern match that says 10%. Now, Microsoft, I think, have said that Windows 10 is the last version ever of Windows, all right? But they're, of course, going to issue more incremental updates. The build number certainly changes. So if we just go 10% wildcard, the WMI filter there will say, well, it's true if it's Windows 10 or it's true if it's Windows 7 or later. So if you are using WMI filters to say apply group policy settings to your Windows 7 machines and not your XP machines, which we all know you still have in your organization, you're going to have to update that for Windows 10, because when you add Windows 10 to your organization, those group policies that are saying that are WMI filtered aren't going to apply. All right, so you may have to update your WMI filters in your organization to support Windows 10. That's my list. So hopefully now you've learned enough about how not to do this and get into big trouble and not mix the streams, because bad things happen when you mix the streams. And you understand what you need to do to have group policy and Intune working happily together to give you great coverage on how to configure the computers in your environment. Your non-domain join, your domain join, your computers out in the field, the computers in your office. Between the two, you've got full coverage of configuration of those machines. So they work better together, hence the session title. So thank you very much. That's the end of my session. I had a great time. I hope you had some value out of this. Thank you. See you later.